WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
You're a good man, Charlie Brown. You're good at what you do, too.
She is Natalie Jacobson.
You are the Dean of South Shore Broadcasters.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
Best-selling author, Dave Wedge. You got to say that.
I'm sorry. Thank you. Thank you, Mayor. Yes. Thank you. Wonderful to be here. Kevin's been a long time. Thanks for all you do. All you know, your local news icon. We appreciate it.
Kathy's doing a great job at this. And I've decided she's jelly. I got to be peanut butter.
There was a debate about that.
You fine with jelly?
I'm fine with jelly.
Okay, good. Jelly spikes my sugars.
Good evening and welcome to Monday Night Talk. As you know, I am not Kevin Tachi, and I'm going to be your host for the first hour.
Massachusetts State Auditor Diana DeZoglio. Welcome back to Monday Night Talk.
It's great to be back. Thanks so much for having me, Kevin.
Jermaine Wiggins, member of the 2001 Super Bowl champion New England Patriots. Welcome to Monday Night Talk.
Oh, thank you for having me. Anytime.
Not just economic development, but it's how to get the businesses involved.
Senator, I want to thank you.
Thank you, Kevin. I appreciate you being a voice bringing so much community news to folks here on the South Shore.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome and good evening. You have arrived at Monday Night Talk here at 95.9 WATD. Yes, I will be your pilot for the next hour and 45 minutes. And all we will do is have great conversation. We'll kick things off in just a few moments. He's already warming up in the bullpen, so to speak. He is a state representative, Matt Muratori. Matt with one T, of course. Keep that in mind. And we'll talk about several things. Annual town meeting in Plymouth this weekend. Also being a guest auctioneer. Who knew? I even talk a little bit about the House a couple of weeks, taking up the FY 2025 budget. And let's get a take on the Ways and Means. What that committee's doing. So we'll speak with Rep. Muratori in just a few moments. And then we'll shuffle on down to Peter Brown. Peter Brown will join us. He is not only a great businessman and someone who volunteers countless hours to so many different organizations, and of course Tiny and Sons Glass, a premier sponsor of Monday Night Talk. Without them, where would we be? Probably in Ed Perry's doghouse. But Peter's going to come on. Peter also serving as the president of the Pembroke Chamber of Commerce. He'll talk about trying to restart efforts to kind of assist businesses, and they got some events that are coming up. Some candidate forums that they're going to be doing. So we'll speak with Peter about that. Hour number two, we'll speak with Jane Kernan. I think I'm saying her name right. Jane will correct. Jane, if you're listening, if I'm saying your name wrong, when you come in at 7 o'clock, just please correct me. She is a candidate for state representative, the 6th Plymouth District. We'll talk with her about her campaign. And then we're going to close things out with a musical. No. We're not going to do a musical. We're actually going to talk about Legally Blonde, the musical. Massasoit Theater Company will be putting this on. It'll be hitting the stage on April 27th. Of course, so we have Mark Rocheteau. He is the producer of the show. And, of course, we're going to have the star of the show, Carly Williams. She plays Elle Woods. So that's all coming up in just a moment or a few moments, a smatter of moments. We turn our focus to Mr. Matt Muratori. How are you, Representative?
Good. I'm admiring all the... You're doing a lot of decoration around here.
I'm not doing anything. I'm here admiring it with you.
There's no studio, and I see Christine.
Yeah, Larry's over there.
Now, and Larry's over here. Well, I just realized everything is just all changing.
The news booth's been over there for years.
What's that?
The news booth's been over there for years. You just couldn't see it because there were items in your way.
That's why. Yeah. Okay.
Larry would stand there, and you'd have all of the workings,
like
CD
now
players.
You can see. Yeah, nice. Nice job.
Well, wait till they move this all down there. Then you won't see another.
I've been here 10 minutes, and I just finally realized that you were just talking.
They fresh coat of paint.
Yeah,
they painted everything.
Good.
They painted the wood.
Good. It looks good.
They even put a coat of paint on Larry.
Yeah.
Look at him. He's shiny. He's like a new car.
He's like, although, right, wrap it up.
Although he doesn't have that new car smell.
No, he doesn't.
He does not.
Peter Brown, what a great guy he is. I'm so glad he's going to be on.
He is somebody who just gets...
I don't know where he gets his energy from and his time. There's got to be two of them out there.
He's been cloned.
I see him down in Plymouth all the time.
You ever see the movie Multiplicity?
Yeah.
With Michael Keaton?
Yeah. Just a great human being.
Yep. He gives freely. He does stuff for different organizations. We know the Pilgrim Hall Museum. He's on the head of that board.
Yep. Yeah. He used to be the head of the Plymouth Chamber, too, at one time.
Yeah. Yep.
So many different things. So.
I think he still does stuff with the Plymouth Chamber and supports them heavily.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
How are you?
Good. Very good. Yeah.
What are you supporting these days?
Oh, my God.
I see you still have your glasses on from the eclipse. It's okay. Take those off.
Funny story about that. So today, I had a meeting at Town Hall with DCR in Plymouth. So I had a meeting in there, and I came out probably around 2:35, 2:40, and I didn't have glasses, but somebody outside was standing there. I said, oh, how's it look? He said, hey, take a look. So I looked. It was like a quarter. Then I had to run down to the... I had to run to the Kingston Town Hall, and when I came out of there, same thing, a couple people out there, somebody let me use the glass, it was half. And then when I got down to Bourne, I had to go to Bourne Town Hall, I got there at 3:30, they were out there, somebody made it was fully over. But what I didn't realize is, I thought it would be dark out, but it really wasn't, it was a lot colder, it dropped like 15 degrees, it really dropped, the temperature dropped. But it wasn't really that dark.
Must be my Mediterranean blood. I didn't feel it, but it did get kind of dark.
It could be because I was down in Bourne, maybe by the canal.
It could be that.
Yeah, but I guess if you were closer, that's why people. I couldn't understand why people were going to Vermont and up that far.
Yeah, because you.
But then you see the total darkness. I get it. Yeah,
but we ended up with like the little fingernail. We didn't get to see the full eclipse.
Yeah, it wasn't. Yeah, yeah,
wasn't much.
Nah, it was okay.
We can wait 45 years for the next one.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm
glad I didn't pay for the glasses. But thank you for the folks who let me borrow this.
Luckily, one of the communities that I work in, they actually, their Board of Health, their respective Board of Health, were giving them out for free.
Idea.
While supplies lasted, of course.
Yeah.
This morning, I popped by, and I'm like, I was hoping to grab a couple of staff, and they're like, those were gone last Thursday.
What a great idea. That was a great idea. Yeah.
Yeah. Chris Schultz, he tip of cap to him.
Yeah. Yeah. Great job.
In Abington.
Great job. Yeah.
That's a free plug for you, Chris. Just keep that in mind. This weekend, busy with Plymouth town meeting?
Yeah.
Annual town meeting?
Yeah. So we had the Plymouth annual town meeting. They dissolved the special town meeting. Got that all dissolved. And then they started into the annual town meeting articles. And they actually were supposed to go till 3, and they ended up going till after 5. And they still have a couple more articles to go, a couple of the big ones. One with the Plymouth Area Coalition for the Homeless for the shelter they want to build or actually rehab in the industrial park in Plymouth. So that's actually starting as we speak now. And then there's another affordability article through CPC down in Redbrook, down the southern part of Plymouth, for some affordable units down in that complex down there as well. So I'm not sure if they're going to finish up tonight. They're going to try to finish up tonight, but they may go late because those two articles are very very contentious.
How tough is that when you have multiple days of town meeting?
Yeah, it's tough because then you start losing momentum and you start losing some people as well. But in all the years I've been involved with Plymouth Town Meeting for almost 20 years now, it's still great to see the debates that actually go on and the different thinking that happens. And at the end of the day, whatever is decided is decided, and people move on to the next town meeting, which is why it really should be. People don't take things personally, but they have lively debates, and I think they make pretty good decisions for the most part.
I think the key to a swift town meeting, but one that allows enough conversation, but knows when, all right, we're getting a little repetitive here, without someone coming out of the audience at the 2-hour mark on, can we move the questions? Mm-hmm. If you have a good moderator.
Yeah, and Steve Trifoletti is one of the best.
Steve Trifoletti is one of the best.
Yeah.
Also, I would say, I know that Sean Riley at Abington does a fantastic job. Knowing that there's going to be conversation, there's going to be debate, allow it, and then once you feel as though enough's been, let's take a vote.
Yeah, let's move it along. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, they do a great job there, and prior to that, there's 18 caucuses. So if you have like Sue Giovanetti from the Plymouth Area Coalition of the Homeless, she had to go to 18 different caucuses to pitch the idea of getting $3 million for her project. So there's a lot of homework that's done ahead of time, too, and people don't really realize that. They think it all takes place right at town meeting. But it's all done ahead of time, a lot of the homework. So a lot of the questions have gone out of the way at that point, but there's still more that happened at town meeting. But a lot of homework's done ahead of time.
This is like a lot of preparation and a lot of touch and base with folks to get that information out.
Yeah, there's 162 town meeting members, so it's a lot of members that you have to try to get to.
Now, did you have the opportunity, because there are multiple people who represent the town of Plymouth, Kathy Lenatra, mm-hmm. you have Senator Sue Moran. Mm-hmm. I believe that you got to kind of give like a little bit of a legislative update, did you not?
So what we do is the town moderator, Trifoletti, actually has asked us probably about 10 years ago, or maybe 8 years ago, if we would all rotate. We used to give, when I first started, we used to always give, you know, the state of the state, and it would go on and on and on, you know. So he finally figured out, look, can you all kind of get together and do one? That includes everything that you all want to talk about. So we rotate every year, and this year was my year. So I was able to give an update. He likes it to go 5 minutes. It actually went 7 minutes because there was really a lot to cover. You know, we talked about things like the tax cuts that happened back in October that Governor Healey signed, the $1 billion tax relief. So we kind of touched upon that, and, you know, the senior circuit breaker tax credits, child independent tax credits, the estate planning, the Title V septic credits. These are all things that the citizens of Plymouth, you know, want to hear about. So we talked about that. We also talked about the municipality empowerment bill that is working its way through the legislature right now. It's something that Governor Healey has proposed, and what it would do a few things. It would increase the maximum local option lodging tax on hotels, motels, and other rentals from 6% to 7%. It would increase a local meals option tax from 0.75% to 1%. And then it also will be able to add a 5% local option for motor vehicle excise surcharge as well. So these are options that, if passes, will allow the municipalities to either take these options or not take these options. Obviously, municipalities are looking for ways to create some revenue, but they can be contentious as well, because it's going to be, we're not doing any state tax increases of any sort, but it's being put now on the towns to see if they want to do it. So then it gets a little contentious at that point. So there'll be some discussion about these if the bill goes that far to gets done. So
it's definitely interesting knowing that, you know, more and more we're watching our pocketbooks, our wallets, and it seems that all costs are rising across the board.
Yeah, I've been going throughout the whole district, as you know, Kevin, and just people just want to talk about two things, the migrant issue and the affordability of items in the Commonwealth. Things are getting expensive. And the migrant issue, let me just touch upon that just a minute.
You stole my segue.
Yeah, well, it's not about the migrants themselves.
No.
This country was built on immigration. And we all know that.
100%.
And you know, these people, you don't blame them for wanting a better life and coming here and all that.
Yep.
And it's definitely the federal government's problem. The federal government has caused this issue. But the what we're doing in Massachusetts and the money that we're spending, you know, that's some of the problem. It's the spending that we're doing. We're going to be hitting $1 billion on this before the fiscal year ends June 30th. And now we're working on the next budget that will begin July 1st, and we're looking at the money that's going to go in that. So the revenue shortfalls, they're not all because of the migrant issue, but we'll find out. There'll be a report coming out this month that will, from Secretary of Finance, to find out, you know, why are we losing revenue in the Commonwealth? We've lost over $1 billion in revenue. I think we're going to find is people have been leaving Massachusetts. You know, even though we did some tax credits, it's almost a little bit too late for some of this, and we're hearing that a lot, that people have left. You know, people have moved to Florida, New Hampshire, and I think we're going to see some of that. But then things are so much more expensive now.
It's not housing. It's not cost effective to live here, and then knowing that the millionaire's tax was put into place.
Right. I think that put people over the edge. People that, and $1 million, you know, people say, oh, that's a lot of, it's really not a lot of money when you're retired, you sell a home, you know, and you have a, you know, 401k or whatever, and you have some of that, it's not a lot of money. And, you know, even though capital gains has changed from $1 million to $2 million, there's other states that are a lot more than $2 million as well. So it did move the needle a little bit, but I'm not sure it moved it enough. And but we did have a positive cash flow in March. The state did take in 4.7% more than what was projected in the budget, which is the first time in this fiscal year that we actually took in more revenue than losing. So out there, it was like 9 months in a row we were losing money.
Okay. And again, you're just tuning in. We are chatting with State Representative Matt Muratori, and he is providing us information for our regular segment called the State House Report, where we invite in legislators, constitutional officers, to kind of talk about some of the things that are going on up at the State House. We have a great group of folks who are willing to come in on a regular basis. I can announce early that we have State Rep Kathy Lenatra will be joining us next week. We kind of got like a little health update thing going on. So I've just confirmed while you were talking.
Oh, nice.
That she'll be joining us. Nice. Peanut butter will be here.
Jelly won't be.
Jelly will not be here. actually, no. Jelly. She is Jelly.
Oh, she's Jelly. That's right.
Allison is peanut butter. Yeah, yes.
Which makes sense.
It does make sense. But spikes are sugars. Anyways, let's talk about you serve on the Ways and Means Committee.
Yeah, with Kathy Lenatra, actually. Yes. Yeah.
And what has that been? What has that been like? What are some of the conversations that are being had?
Yeah, it's been great. I mean, you know, I've been on it for a few years now, and I love the fact that we're traveling. We travel throughout the state. And we get and we hear from different folks with regard to the budget, from different secretariats throughout the whole Commonwealth. And I think we had 7 or 8 out traveling shows that we did. And so you get a good sense of what's behind the numbers. And that helps us to try to formulate the House budget, which we will be working on. It's usually the last Monday of the month. I think the week of the 22nd, so the fourth Monday of the month, which is the 22nd.
Mm-hmm.
However, the Jewish holidays are there, so we're not going to start till that Wednesday, which I think is the 25th or something. So we'll start the House budget. We'll probably debate it for 3 or 4 days, maybe 5. We'll go into the weekend. We'll get the there'll probably be 1,200 different amendments to the budget. So we'll debate that and we'll finalize the budget before May 1st on the House side. And then what will happen then the Senate takes up their budget the third week of May. And once they debate theirs and they're all their amendments, they'll have theirs finalized by the 1st of June. And then it will go into conference committee. And the differences between the House and the Senate bill will go through a conference committee. Historically, we're supposed to be having a budget to the governor by before
past
July 1st.
Past few years, that hasn't been
the
case.
The past several years, yeah. It hasn't been. I think last year. I think
just prior to COVID, I want to say, might have been the last one.
It may have been, or maybe in a couple years before COVID.
Yeah.
But I think last year, the governor signed the budget on August 9th. Which is a bit late.
but the legislature
we do a 112 budget, to keep it going. Yeah, yeah. At least we're not like Washington, where you do that every couple of months.
Get the can down the road.
Yeah, yeah.
Any changes? Anything major you see with this particular FY25 budget?
Yeah, it's the one thing that we're seeing going throughout the Commonwealth, and again, looking at the revenue expenditures that have been dropping. We're not really seeing that the numbers will come back, and the numbers may be where the numbers are at right now. What we're seeing, so with those shortfalls, there will be some reductions in state agencies' dollars. There's no doubt about it. We have to have a balanced budget, and if you're $1 billion to $1.5 billion short right now in this fiscal year that we're trying to make up for now. There's going to have to be some cuts that are going to have to be made, with whether it's social service programs or public safety or education or what it's going to be, that's something out to debate that we'll have to figure out.
What is the administration saying in regards to Washington, D.C. and any assistance, financial assistance that they can offer when it comes to the migrant situation?
Yeah.
So, knowing that that's going to be something that's going to put a dent in the budget.
Yeah, well, one of the things that we've done as legislators, and I know the governor has done as well, and has tried to make the case to our federal delegation as well as the White House that we need some money here, and there's no doubt about it. And they acknowledge that we need the money, but even when there's been discussions about the dollar amounts, they're not really large amounts of what they're talking about either. So the whole migrant issue through the border issue through the federal government, they have to have a policy there first, and they can't get together on a policy. So there's no funding unless you have a policy on the border crisis. So
it's just kind of on the backs of each.
Yeah, yeah.
Every state that is accepting in folks.
Yeah,
need help.
There are not many states that are. But, you know, that right to shelter law was put into place in 1983, signed by Governor Dukakis. And that law was really put into place to help families, existing families that live here, that they come into hard times. They would have a place in Massachusetts to take care of them. They'd have a place to go. And now it's just, you know, anybody can just come here. And that's the change that's happened. They figured out anybody can come here and we have to shelter them. Now, there's also a waiting list. But the people on the waiting list are put someplace now. And that was my point about the whole migrant issue, is that we're not really taking care of these people the way we should be. I think WBZ Channel 4 is doing an investigative report on it tonight that kind of talks about, you know, the meals that they're getting and where they're staying in hotels conference rooms. And
there are stories out there.
We're not treating them well.
There are stories. Well, I'm hearing stories on the – I'm hearing stories on both sides. I'm hearing where they're treated very well, and I'm also hearing that maybe they're not being as treated as well. But yet the hotel owners, the folks who are providing the food service – are benefiting from this more so than anybody
absolutely.
Else. So it's something the band's watching.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that I think people will continue to talk right up until September and November.
Yeah. Yeah, and you're right. The $64 a day for meals and all that. But when you start looking at the meals they're getting, you're like, wait a minute, who's actually getting the $64 a day?
Mm-hmm.
You know, is it really is that food really cost that much? Is there much, or was there a lot of profit built in or whatever? But we've got to get to the bottom of it. You know, one thing the House just did was they actually put that you have to be out within 9 months, and then they'll give you a 90-day leeway. I mean, I don't know how that's really going to work. I would like to see us put a residency requirement at the beginning of it, that maybe, you know, 3 months you have to live in Massachusetts, or 6 months or something. But no, they can stay for 9 months now, and then we move them out. Well, I'm not sure where we're going to move them to if we get to that point.
Are there any questions? I mean, homelessness has been a major issue in the Commonwealth prior to the migrant issue.
Right.
I'm hoping that the migrant issue isn't supplanting those who are dealing with homelessness, whether it's families or individuals who have been experiencing it regularly, and that they're not somebody who's getting bumped off to help those who are newly fresh into the country.
Yeah, well, I can tell you that in Plymouth, and I only, you know, small area.
Yeah, you can only...
The churches are taking them in now for the winter, whereas before they would have the Pilgrim Sands Motel that they could use. Now the Pilgrim Sands Motel did have some migrants in there, but since then they've been displaced because I think they were doing work on the motel. But that just gives you a small example of where they could have gone, but now they're at churches.
You know, earlier you were kind of opining about how great Peter Brown is. You yourself also do a lot of work. You work with a lot of nonprofits, including Purses with a Purpose.
Yeah.
What's you, guest auctioneer?
Yeah, yeah. So former Chief Mike Boteri and I, which, by the way, Mike Boteri received the Adele Manfredi Award to the Plymouth Education Foundation Saturday night, and I was honored to present him a citation of that for his work with school safety, the opiate crisis that he started with PCO Hope. And other things he's done, and he's retired now, but he well deserved that honor. He's also the chair of the Salvation Army, and so him and I, this is the second time we've done this. It was his auction of purses, and what they do is they have about 50 or 60 purses, all different makes and styles and all that, and they put, you know, little trinkets inside of it, whether it's a, you know, $10 Dunkin' Donut gift card or, you know, a teddy bear or something. And there's a value of it, and there's a starting bid.
Right.
And so we went through for about 2 hours. We had more fun and more laughs. The place was packed, and we don't know how much it raised. The last time we did it, it raised over $2,000. We think we probably doubled it this time. And it all goes back to the Salvation Army.
Yeah, and again, this is the second annual Mystery Purse Auction. This is held at the Salvation Army, and this was for the Sunrise Rotary Club of Plymouth. Is that accurate?
Now, Mike and I are part of the Sunrise Rotary Club of Plymouth.
Okay.
No, it was for the Salvation Army.
Okay,
yeah,
right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just want to make sure, because that was part of the...
Yeah. There was a lot of members from the Sunrise Rotary that supports it. Because Sunrise Rotary holds their meetings every Thursday at 7:30 at the Salvation Army. So it's a tight connection there.
Now, haven't you done the... When before it turned into the local scene, you had PAC TV used to do their annual... Almost it was very much like GBH.
Yeah.
When they used to do their auction, you would do boards. Didn't I see you do boards before? I know Rob Hackle in the morning.
Such a morning news guy. I did boards, but then I graduated to host. Yeah, so Steve Trifoletti and I would do the host. He would take the main parts, and when he couldn't, I would take like the night shift or the, you know, the Sunday afternoon or something like that. So yes, and
you're a smooth guy. I can see you. I can see you doing
it. It was so much fun. Those were so much fun too. But now that's all online, so they don't need our skills anymore. We also did the I don't know if you remember or not, when we the tsunami that happened in Japan back on March 11th, I think, of 2011, actually. There was a tsunami out in Japan, and we had a sister city. We have a sister city relationship with Shishigahama, Japan. Yep. And so we did a telethon within 9 days of that. Because the Rotary Auction was already set up for that, so we did an auction. We raised over $100,000 in 3 hours.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So I was honored to be part of that as well. So we've done this stuff before. The Dancing with the Stars. I mean, I was the first contestant on the Dancing with the Stars when that first happened back in 2018. It started with the Plymouth Suicide Coalition because they didn't have any money for education. So right. We started that first off. I came in third place that year. And then the following years, you know, became a host, and then the chamber took it over, and then I was a judge, and that's really taken off as well. It's nice when you're a part of these things and they really start taking off.
And you can say, remember when?
Yeah, and it's great that they're making money.
If folks want to, you know, reach out to your constituent services, let's not forget you're running for state senate.
Folks
want to reach out for you on either one, how can they get in touch with you?
They can call me on my cell phone, which is 508-930-2979. Just makes it easier.
Yeah, you're quick to respond. Yeah. I that's how I get in touch with them.
Yeah.
Be like, Matt, it's your turn in the rotation. Yeah. He's like, I'll be there. And he shows up. Thank you again for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate that.
You got it.
Yeah.
We're going to step aside just for a hot minute. When we come back, Peter Brown. He'll join us here on 95.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
What is AA?
Alcoholics Anonymous is an international fellowship of people who have had a drinking problem.
It is non-professional and self-supporting.
AA is multiracial, apolitical, and available almost everywhere.
There are no age or education requirements. Membership is open to anyone who wants to do something about their drinking problem.
For more information, literature, and videos about Alcoholics Anonymous, and to find a meeting near you, visit AA.org. Alcoholics Anonymous has a solution.
Eat, drink, and socialize at the Patio at McWiggins in Whitman Center. Sit down with a specialty cocktail and start your meal off with a patio sampler with chicken wings, egg rolls, potato skins, fried cauliflower, and chicken and biscuits. Watch the game on 7 55-inch monitors while digging into braised short ribs, fish tacos, fig and goat cheese flatbread, or Koji steak tips. Relax and listen to the live entertainment at the patio every Friday and Saturday night. And don't forget, McWiggins Pub next door. They're located at 546 and 552 Washington Street in downtown Whitman.
Monday Night Talk continues all week long. Go to 95.9WATD.com/Monday Night Talk and keep in touch on Facebook and Twitter. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
And we return with more conversation right here on Monday Night Talk, 95.9WATD. And our conversation continues with one of our premier sponsors. Thanks to his family business, Tiny and Sons Glass. His boys do a great job. Peter Brown joins us. He's also been my repeat co-host from time to time, and also somebody who is very instrumental with segments. He's not shy to say, "Hey, I got a great idea for a segment. Let's do this." I will say proudly that one of the segments he had suggested we do a few years ago at the Pilgrim Hall Museum gained us an award, a first place award for our work. Peter Brown, how are you this day?
Doing good. How are you doing?
Another day in paradise, my friend.
Absolutely.
You know what they say, and if God gives me enough wind in my lungs to be able to talk and better inform the folks here in the South Shore, then it's definitely a good day. So the thought, again, I
I love sponsoring our premier sponsors, those who invest in this radio show and what it is that we do. And you are somebody who you wear many hats. You proudly give your time to a lot of different organizations here in and around the South Shore. And one of them happens to be one that is that helps promote business, and that is the Pembroke Chamber of Commerce. Let's do a little bit of an update. How are things at the chamber these days?
It's going really well. I mean, it took us a while from, you know, COVID kind of hurt a lot of institutions, you know, volunteer institutions like ourselves. And it took a while for us to get back on our feet, but we're doing really well. We finally rebuilt the board. We've got a great group of small business people, you know, generating interest in the community and trying to reinvest and get other people involved. So it's good.
Usually one of the things that helps helps promote businesses via the chamber are a lot of its signature events or events that it holds for folks to kind of not only have a good time, but also learn about the various businesses through networking. Do you have anything coming up in the near future or anything that maybe there's a prospective business that's listening that might want to get involved?
So the big thing right now is that the networking side of it, you know, because of COVID has changed, and there's so many, you know, after hours that have been going on, we've kind of switched it up on our end on the Pembroke Chamber side. And usually the average after hours are between like 5 and 7. And I went to a Duxbury Chamber after hours, and I saw they changed the time from 4 to 6, and it seemed to be really well. So we've got a couple of events that are coming up in, you know, April, May, and June. They'll be right on our calendar of events, so either on our Facebook page or on our website. But one of our biggest things that we have coming up is the town election. We have 3 select board members that are running, and we have 5 school committee members that are running. So we're going to be holding a town elections debate at the Pembroke Library, which will be on May 9th. Between 6 and 8. It's going to be a very well attended event, and want people to watch out for the emails and go to our Facebook page for the announcements. There's going to be we want people to write in their questions for us to go through, and then each candidate's going to have 5 questions to answer, and then they'll have 2 minutes to talk about themselves and give their bio, and hopefully we get some information out for them. And local PAC TV, which is Local Scene now, is going to be streaming it live and recording it so that we can replay it, so people have all that information before the town election the next week.
How important is it that the chamber is involved in events like this to better inform people about individuals who want to serve the public and they oversee some of the community development and the finances and things like that?
Well, the biggest thing is that we have two select boards in our board that serve on our board. We have John Brown and Tracy Marino. And we're also very connected to Bill Chenard, our town manager, and we work with the police and the fire. And what we try to recommend to small businesses when they want to get involved is to find out who their customers are first, and where they live, and what they're involved in the town. And second, get involved in the community, because that's where the business is driven. And we found that since the rec center, that's in fact, we're going to have a grand opening, hopefully in the first week of June, has generated interest in Pembroke. Now we're seeing it on the real estate side. We're seeing it on the business side. There's a lot more questions being asked at the town hall about permits. Then we also see the revitalization of the Pembroke Country Club with the Bristol Company coming in and doing their investment into housing into the country club itself. And then also that they've bought a piece of property where the old Shepherd's Funeral Home is, and they're going to be putting in a restaurant and commercial in the downtown. So we're seeing a revision or a revised Pembroke and a really interested Pembroke. So we're trying to get the business community to see that and to invest in the infrastructure and the economic development side, because that helps us all the way down the line, whether you're a business or you're a resident of the town. And to go forward from there, now we have the public safety building. Hopefully they're going to break ground in 2025. And that's right in the heart of the entrance of Pembroke, right there at the corner of 14 and 53, where Tiny's Corner is right there. And that's, people are going to see, once that's finished, it's going to be a welcome to Pembroke type of thing. And hopefully that'll entice businesses and people to move to Pembroke and invest in Pembroke.
What are the things that Pembroke residents care most about?
Well, they want security. They want a place to live where they can enjoy. I mean, we have some 7 or 8 ponds that people fish and boat every year. We have an extensive fish ladder with herring running that have been revitalized, and you'll see that during the fish fry in the first week of May. And you've seen Pembroke is starting to reinvest in their structure itself as far as being a place where, it's going to be walk friendly, sports friendly, and entice other people to move in. So I think the community itself is starting to realize that, Pembroke's, one of the oldest towns besides Plymouth in the state of Massachusetts. And, we're a fishery, boating, hiking, backpacking, camping, summer residents, the whole nine yards. So we got everything, a lot to offer. And I think that as far as the business community, they want to invest in that.
And if you're just tuning in, we are being joined by one Mr. Peter Brown. He is a very proud sponsor of this show, Tiny and Sons Glasses, as is Peter. And we're talking a little bit about the Pembroke Chamber of Commerce, everything Pembroke related. You had mentioned earlier that it seemed that because of the pandemic, and I think a lot of people, a lot of businesses, a lot of organizations are still working to regain some of the ground that was lost during the pandemic. How do you feel that the chamber is rebounding since, 2020?
I think we've come full circle, to be honest with you. I think people understand that COVID's behind us. If anything, the positive thing that happened with COVID is that we found that if there is any kind of emergency or a state of emergency or anything like that, the businesses know how to navigate. We figured it out. And I think now that people see that we can get through these emergency things, situations, and hurricanes, blizzards, flu, whatever, they know that they can depend on their local business or their local community leaders to help us navigate through it. And as the chamber itself, I mean, we're very blessed. I mean, we have the Marshfield Chamber, we have Hanover, we have the Plymouth Chamber, we have the Duxbury Chamber. I mean, there's a lot of avenues that the Pembroke Chamber connects with, but the Pembroke, if you do business in Pembroke, and if you live in Pembroke and you're a resident and do business in Pembroke, you should be involved in the Pembroke Chamber, because that's where your roots are. Me as a business owner, people go, you talk about, starting the businesses and how they do it and all that. And I say the first thing you got to do is where you do your job or where your business is located, find out, sit in a Dunkin' Donuts or a coffee shop or a Mary Lou's or, Blueberry Muffin, and sit in that chair and watch the people walk through, especially on Saturdays and Sundays. And you'll see that, the kids, the sporting events, kids coming through, and you see the names of the businesses on the back of the shirts, and you'll find out how they got involved and how they get sponsored. And that's what you want to do. And the Pembroke Chamber can help you navigate that. I mean, we have a lot of connections with the school. We work with Mary Ellen Gates, and the Pathfinder is, placing interns into businesses. We work with DECA. We work with the Boy Scout Troop, Troop 105. We just sponsored their Pinewood Derby. We do with the Pembroke Arts Festival, Pembroke Celebrates, the Pembroke Tree Lighting. So those type of things we can get you connected with if you want to get involved with Pembroke, you know, the Pembroke community, and we could show you how to get you know, get in touch with these people so you can sponsor or volunteer for those upcoming events.
Now, is this your second or third time being the president or chair of the Pembroke Chamber?
This is my first time. Dave Shea retired, and then Kyle Haney served his. He was a great president. It was Billy Boyle and then Carl Haney. And then I was vice chair for a while, and when I timed off from the Plymouth Chamber, I took a little bit of sat back a little bit and got my breath back a little bit. And they asked me if I could run the Pembroke Chamber to get it back on its feet, and I said I would.
Well, and that's where my confusion is because you were the president of the Plymouth Chamber, right?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay.
I was on the chamber board for almost Plymouth Chamber board for 12 years, and I did serve Pembroke at the same time, but Plymouth, that was a very good experience for me, and I was very blessed. I had, you know, Amy Naples, and I worked Bob Nolette, and their staff was just amazing. But what the difference between the Plymouth and the Pembroke is Plymouth has paid staff, Pembroke does not, so it's all volunteer.
Okay.
And so good.
No, it's worth noting. We have a couple of moments left here, and we'll remind folks of upcoming events that the Pembroke Chamber is looking forward to having folks attend, whether you are a local business looking to find out more about the chamber, or maybe you're a resident who wants to support chamber events. But I also want to make sure I give you an opportunity to do a tip of the cap as Tiny and Sons Glass evolving into the 21st century with what you offer when it comes to, it isn't just replacing the windshield anymore and making sure it doesn't leak. Your windshield is a piece of technology that has to be properly installed, and you don't want just anybody to be installing your glass or taking care of your vehicle than Tiny and Sons Glass. Tell folks some of the new innovative things that you have at your newly located shop.
This is hard to switch gears. This is hard to switch gears because I had my chamber hat on, so I got to now talk about my business.
But Peter, it's one of the same because you are a business, and you are a business that is part of the chamber.
Well, and this is where, you know, this is the interesting conversation. I mean, our business right now, we're up to date with all the technology. We can do probably 95% of the cars that are on the road recalibration-wise. So we're like a one-stop shop. And we have both the installation side now, we have the recalibration side. We also are connected to 15 different dealerships throughout the South Shore. We have a partnership with Cape Auto Repair in Plymouth that we work with because they have a recalibration station there. So if you can't drop it at our shop, we can do it in Plymouth. And we also have a partnership with Sullivan Tire. So if you can't drop it here or at Cape, there's Sullivan Tire locations all throughout the South Shore that we can do the windshield replacement at their shop, and they can do the recalibration for you. So it's amazing. I mean, it's just the technology. I've been flew California 3 times in the past 4 months. I've been in Utah. I was down in Connecticut, just looking at similar businesses to ours to make sure that we're doing the job right. And it's just been incredible. So I'm having a good time with it. My dad left me in a good spot that I can't mess up.
Well, and I'm sure that your dad is proud of you and Eddie and the rest of the family and crew over there, Tiny and Sons Glass.
Well, and then, Kevin, I just want you to know that I appreciate everything that you do on Monday Night Talk, because this connection that you give us for our voice, you know, I always said this about my dad when he got kind of house shut in because when he lost his leg, it was your show and shows like yours that kept him connected to the community. And I just appreciate everything you do.
Well, again, that's my, you know, Edward Perry is the one who he kind of sees this radio station as a bullhorn to share information, whether it's, you know, 7:45 in the morning to kind of talk up a problem you may have to anything else that's featured on this show or on the station. That's our mission, is to provide the best information that we can. As we have the closing minutes here, again, Peter Brown joining us from Tiny and Sons Glass, a premier sponsor, but also the president of the Pembroke Chamber. Again, remind folks any of the upcoming events that they may want to attend.
So the best thing to do is to go to our website, pembrokechamber.org, And there's a calendar of events that are right there that they can seek and check out. Or go to our Facebook page. There's two Facebook pages. There's the Pembroke Chamber Facebook page, and then there's the Pembroke Chamber of Commerce Facebook page. That's the business page. All of our events are on there. But the biggest event that people I want people to look out for, if the library only holds 75 people. So, but it is going to be televised, and we want you to write in your questions so that we can have the questions ready to ask the candidates that night. Fraser Townsend is going to be the
moderator.
What do you call it? Yeah, moderator. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect. And so he's going to be moderating, and he's going to try to keep it in a tight schedule, so a respectful schedule, so that everybody can get their answers and questions answered. But please, if you go to our website or go to our Facebook page, watch out for those posts that are coming out. If you see the email address to send your questions in, please send your questions. Bios for all the candidates are going to be placed on our Facebook page in the next week and a half, so you'll see who's running.
Excellent. There he is, Peter Brown, our friend, co-host, and of course, sponsor of Monday Night Talk, one of our premier sponsors. Thank you again, Peter.
Kevin, I really appreciate it. And anything that I can do for you, please reach out.
You got it. Folks, I can't believe it. The first hour in the books, it's gone. But fear not, more conversation straight ahead. We'll take a top of the hour break. When we come back, more Monday Night Talk here at 95.9 WATD. Don't go anywhere.
Hi, this is Marilee, one of the activities coordinators at the Marshfield Council on Aging, letting you know about our Spring 2024 Lifelong Learning kickoff registration on Tuesday, April 9th from 9:30 to 11 at the Marshfield Senior Center. There'll be exercise classes, craft, history, nature, and religion classes. The entire list of classes is available at marshfieldseniorcenter.org, and we'll see you on kickoff registration on Tuesday.
South Shore's first choice for live team coverage of breaking news, emergency traffic, and severe weather. 95.9 WATD FM Marshfield and 95.9 WATD.com.
I'm Peter Brown of Tiny and Sons Auto Glass in Pembroke. People ask me, is there anything they can do to prevent getting a broken windshield?
Is there anything I can do to prevent getting a broken windshield?
See, there is. Those big gravel trucks, when they're being loaded, rocks get stuck in the framework of the bed. Truck hits a bump, rock hits your windshield. It pays to stay way back.
It pays to stay way back.
However, if your windshield is broken, just call 1-888-64-TINIES. And thank you.
Monday Night Talk continues all week long. Go to 95.9WATD.com/Monday Night Talk and keep in touch on Facebook and Twitter. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
We return later this hour. We get a little musical. That's right, we speak with Mark Rocheteau, producer of Legally Blonde, the musical at the Massasoit Theater Company. Massasoit Theater Company presents Legally Blonde, the musical. This will be at the Brockton campus, 1 Massasoit Boulevard. And we'll also speak with Carly Williams. She is the star. She's the lead. She is Elle Woods. We'll talk a little bit about that production, which hits the stage on April 27th. As Joe told you, podcast. If you missed the podcast, we are up to date. Up to date. So if there's any segment that you've missed or there was a favorite that you liked, go to the podcast site. We can find us also easily on most of your Spotify and also on the website 959watd.com. Joining us right now, and I'm going to issue her a quick apology because I said her name wrong, and she is our guest. She is a candidate
for State Representative, the 6th Plymouth District. We have Jane Cornyn. Did I say that right?
Cornyn? You did. Thank you.
She is my guest here on Monday Night Talk. For folks who don't know who you are, now, first and foremost, you have a nifty magazine that we all get a chance to take a look at and vote occasionally. Tell them the name of your magazine.
I publish South Shore Home Life and Style magazine. We run the Best of the South Shore, the Boss Awards, and I am a co-founder, and we've been around for about 5 years now, and it's been a tremendous success.
Yeah, and ATD has been a part of that success, thankfully, thanks to the Boss Awards. And
yes, you guys have won many awards.
The radio station, Rob Hackla, Audrey has won as well.
Our readers love you.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And they love to vote. That's what matters.
And they love to vote.
They love to vote. For folks, other than being the founder of a fantastic magazine, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I've lived in Pembroke for almost 30 years. I am a wife and a mom. I have three boys, and they're 21, 23, and 24. So they've gone through the school system, and they're almost out of school. I still have one in college. I started my career in finance. I was a stockbroker in Washington, D.C., and then we moved up here, and I actually was able to stay home for a couple of years and raise my kids. So I'm blessed in a lot of ways.
Talk to us about the open seat, the former state rep, Josh Cutler, who's moved on now, getting a job within the administration.
Yes.
When did you hear about the vacant seat?
Well, I got a couple texts and a couple calls out of the blue, and they told me about it, and I had talked to a couple people about running the last go around, and even some complete strangers sent me texts saying maybe you should run. So I it was out of the blue, and it took a couple weeks for me to kind of review all that's involved with it and talk to my family, etc. But I decided this was the time for me to step up.
So, I mean, how many calls did it take for you? I mean, for people just to call you and go, hey, you would be a great state rep.
Well, the fact that I got some from people that, you know, I didn't really know.
Unsolicited, right.
It was flattering to me. But I've always been very interested in politics. You know, more so on a national level, just kind of as a news junkie. But I've been in the Republican town community in Pembroke. I've been, we've been dealing with the 40B for many years. I've been in all the local chamber of commerces. And I didn't run around against Josh last time because, you know, he was well-liked and an incumbent, and I didn't want to run just to kind of bang my head against the wall or get out there, but I wanted to run this time to win and to actually make some changes and to represent the people.
No, I believe that there has been a decision that there isn't going to be a special election to kind of fill the seat until November or until the end of the legislative session. What's your thoughts on that? Do you think it's good to be able to kind of run, and you're running for to the September primary? If you're successful in September, then you're on the ballot for November, the general election. Do you think it's better? Would you prefer to have a special election?
Well, for the people of the district, I think it's kind of stunning that there is no representative of our district for months, 6 months, more actually. So, running an election, as a non-politician, it gives me time to get up and going and talk to more people and talk about my ideas. So that's fine, but I am concerned that there's nobody representing us.
As you have started to campaign, you've had a campaign kickoff, right?
Yes.
What are people saying to you? What are the voters in your district saying to you are the things they care about, and that that needs to be addressed in their opinion?
Well, the biggest issue that, you know, locally and nationally is the migrant issue right now. Massachusetts is the only state in the country with a right to shelter. And amazingly, there was just a vote a week or two ago that a bipartisan group put together to have a residency requirement, and it was voted down. So I think that there's a lot of concerns about that. There's a massive amount of money, excuse me, almost $1 billion is being spent in this next year's budget. And that's going to come from other places that citizens count on that money. So that is something very concerning. And that also affects education, the classroom sizes and the resources, and that affects healthcare, and that affects housing. It you know, it's really all connected, and that is a huge strain that absolutely concerns citizens.
It's interesting that conversation earlier with an earlier guest, and we had talked a little bit about the migrant situation, and the one concern that I have is that homelessness has been an issue in the Commonwealth before a lot of this became somewhat paramount in the news. My concern is that the folks who have been dealing with families who've been dealing with homelessness, are they in the front of the line somewhere, or if they've been shuttled back or shuffled back for those who are newly here into the country because of our legislation that is on the books. Well, what do you feel needs to be done in regards to rectify this? I mean, I think the biggest problem is that there aren't enough. You have an imbalance as far as party control. You have more Democrats than Republicans.
100%.
Yeah, and it seems as though, you know, gaining any traction, you know, is getting tougher and tougher as the Republicans keep losing, you know, elected officials. I mean, we're seeing elected officials who aren't seeking re-election or who are deciding to run for other seats, diminishing numbers that have been held by the Republicans.
Well, I think that it crosses party lines, this concern. You were talking about the existing homeless. My youngest goes to Wentworth, and getting off the exit at Molina Cass Boulevard for years now, you know, it's right there in front of you, a huge homeless encampment, and that's always been a tragedy, and add to it incoming every day, and there's nothing stopping it. It's going to keep getting worse. So I think that if we can have legitimate conversations and talk about the reality of the budget, and there's only so much money to go around, and so many homes, and so many people to do the work for these homeless, then I think that we can sway some minds on the Democrat side.
Okay, well, let's talk a little bit about the fiscal year 2025 budget that's coming up. If you're elected, you know, that'll be one of the key things, is not so much the dollars and cents, but those communities that you serve looking for you to be able to get them, you know, Chapter 90 monies, you know, for roadway construction and paving roads, worried about Chapter 70 money when it comes to education and any other earmarks that you can get. Talk to me about what you will try, you will attempt to do as a legislator when it comes to getting local aid and bringing it back to your district.
Yeah, I think that that is a huge issue that people want to make sure that our government is using the dollars wisely. And I think that there are so many programs with good intentions, but we really have to see what's working and where we can trim off some of the fat. And a budget shortfall, the answer is not always to raise taxes. We should have some fresh ideas, some reality checks on programs, and to make sure that all the money is used wisely and that people are getting a return on what we're doing.
How do you feel that your background in finances will help you as a legislator?
Well, you know, it's the same thing. Use your money wisely. It's not like the federal government where you can print money. This is actual dollars coming in and dollars going out. And every decision is you're making with someone else's money as a member of the legislature. So it better be a good one. And so my background in finance and as a small business owner, both of them, you know, it just takes a keen eye and to really delve into the numbers because things could be done in a different way and a fresh eye. I am not a politician. I've never run before. I can take a look at things maybe in a fresh light without, you know, without undoing everything that's been done before. But new voices can only help, I think.
How do you feel your fresh set of eyes can help when it comes to discussing finances or when it comes to being able to get things? For example, knowing that you have there are a couple of communities in your district that deal with coastal issues,
yeah,
and fighting for monies to be able for remediation if there's storm damage or if a seawall needs to be rebuilt.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a prioritization, and, you know, that's a pretty big priority of our towns. So we want to make sure that the seawalls and all that goes into the coastal communities could be priority number one if you have a business a block away from the seawall that's not working and your area is flooded. We want to prioritize those things that keep small businesses going, protects homes, and can have a community grow instead of shrinking away from lack of overseeing the dollars.
Okay. If you're just tuning in, we're privileged to be speaking with Jane Cornyn. She is our guest, and she is a candidate for the 6th Plymouth District State Rep seat, which I think there is a precinct in Marshfield.
Yes.
I think Duxbury, are there three precincts in Duxbury?
It's all of Duxbury.
All of Duxbury now. Pembroke.
Most of Pembroke, except for one.
And is it two or three precincts
in
Hanson?
Two in Hanson.
Okay. And yeah, because Dave DeCoste has one
right.
in Hanson.
Right.
Kinda got, because of redistricting, it got shuffled. Have you had a chance to get out to each part, each town, and meet people and kind of get an idea, glean what the differences are between the communities and what their needs are?
Well, from running the magazine, I'm very familiar with the towns on the South Shore. I'm out talking to small business owners every day. I am looking forward to talking to voters more and really getting feedback and guidance as to what their main concerns are and what they like, what they don't like, their ideas, fresh ideas. So I have not gotten out as much, but you know that's what I'll be doing for the next 6 months.
Yeah, your campaign is new.
Yeah,
just getting started, underway. Other than the migrant issue, what are some of the other issues that are important to you as a candidate that may resonate with the voters in your district?
Well, as I said, tied in with that is the housing. The MBTA communities,
oh, yeah,
is a big issue.
Overlay district, right?
And, you know, there are potential changes to zoning laws all over. I was just down on Powder Point Bridge and at Duxbury Beach today for the eclipse. And you think about the beautiful homes and the communities we've put together, and to have the overreach. I've been fighting a 40B that they're trying to put on the North River in Pembroke. And the people of the town should be able to have some say in it. The state is very, very strong and pushing, and I just think that the town should have more say and be able to plan things out and have development the way they'd like it.
I'm not sure if you have you been following what's going on with the town of Milton. Milton is one of those communities.
Yes.
It's the one community right now that voted for it in town meeting, but then had a referendum vote, and the referendum vote voted down the MBTA Communities Act, their plan that they had put in place. Now you have
a lawsuit
going, and there's a threat that they're going to be losing, you know, grant monies mm-hmm. that they were given. Do you feel that that's right? And is that something that a legislator should get in there and at least say, have a little bit of say?
Oh, I should hope so. Yeah. I mean, it's the general theme is government overreach and unfunded mandates and the ability of the towns to create their own communities and to obviously everybody wants to build, but the force factor shouldn't be part of it. And the people of Milton are being sued, and they pulled the money from the seawall, I believe. You know, those are some strong tactics. And you know, it's a lot of money. So the government, the state has leeway over that. And I think that's the legislature's job to fight for the district and to make sure it's fair.
And for folks who may not know as far as how this is covered, this is the my basic understanding of it is that there are 177 communities that are either, you know, adjacent to the commuter rail or a neighboring community that are part of this mm-hmm. that have to offer up some kind of zoning overlay district to be able to zone for affordable housing or for enough sufficient housing that's within a transient way, and that, you know, you have one community right now, but what if we saw more communities that were pushing against this, you know, and weren't on board with this? This is just something that's going to be watching. We'll see how things play out with the town of Milton. I want to, as we got a couple of minutes left here, I want to talk a little bit about constituent services. How important do you feel it is as far as being able to be a legislator who's there for a constituent who may have an issue, whether it's an issue with unemployment or there's something that they know that their elected official can help them on a state level?
Yeah, I think that's incredibly important. I didn't get into the backstory of the magazine, but suffice it to say that the company I used to work for was a magazine company, and it closed its doors without any warning. And I had three kids in college, so for one time in my life, I applied for unemployment because I was shocked, and so that was about five years ago. And I did have to reach out and get help because it is a tangled web and a very difficult process to go through. So constituent services to help somebody get through the minutia of all the government regulations and the websites, et cetera, I think that's very important. Elder services are huge, that we really have to help the elderly work out whatever their benefits they're due or healthcare problems.
Heating,
we can help them.
You name
heating.
It, yeah.
There's so much and there's so much need. So I think that's key, and you have to be able to relate to what you're and be available for your constituents. So yes, I think I'm excited about that.
Okay. If you are elected, are there any given committees that you would look to serve on, or is there or committee assignments or any areas that you would hopefully be able to sit on a committee for?
Well, the finance committee, the housing, because of the 40B, I've been active with Health Rights Mass, so Health and Human Services. I don't know the exact name of that committee, but and there is an ethics committee. I think that is really key, and I'd be interested in that also.
Okay. Anything I haven't asked you in regards to your candidacy for state rep, but you feel it's important to tell the listeners who are tuned in right now?
Well, having been the only one that started a business and hired people And my fresh take, my business experience would be an asset. As a non-politician, I believe that's an asset. I think people are done with politicians, and they want a regular citizen that understands experiences with raising kids, with school systems, with housing, with mortgages, with town issues, somebody out there that's fighting for them. So my website is janecornan.com, C-O-U-R-N-A-N.com. And I'd love to meet any one of your listeners and discuss their issues and how I can help.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
And talking a little bit about sharing who you are and talking about your campaign. And I look forward to having you back on the program as your campaign evolves and
yes,
as we
please.
See more candidates.
That'd be great. Thank you very much.
All right. There she is, Jane Cornan. She has been our guest for state representative. We're going to step aside. And when we come back, a little song and dance. We'll speak with Mark Rocheteau and Carly Williams. Talk a little bit about Legally Blonde, the musical. When we come back, you're tuned into Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
Located in downtown Whitman, McWiggins Pub is a fashionable, upscale Irish sports pub with a lively bar and dining room. With all the class of a Boston pub, McWiggins serves a great pub menu featuring favorites like beer-battered fried pickles, Reuben sandwiches, shepherd's pie, bangers and mash, and meatloaf. And of course, they have Guinness on tap. McWiggins is a great place to eat, drink, and socialize with family and friends. With 8 flat-screen TVs, you'll always find yourself in the center of the action of your favorite team. And don't forget the patio at McWiggins right next door. They're located at 546 and 552 Washington Street in downtown Whitman.
Invest your time in listening to Cape Retirement Radio and learn a smarter approach to investing so you can protect your future. Cape Retirement Radio, featuring Chris Letond, Thursday nights at 6:15 and Sunday mornings at 10 on 95.9 WATD. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
And wouldn't you know it, the final segment of Monday Night Talk is finally upon us. Not just Monday Night, but the show itself. I got to tell you, sometimes these shows fly by. The fun that we have, being able to talk to different people, having different discussions. If you haven't figured it out by now, I mean, we've been doing this for 14 years. The idea is to have different conversations. We're not just a show that talks about politics. We're not a show that just talks with authors or folks who have issues in the community. But we do other things. We love the arts. And this segment, I think, might prove it. Joining us, he is a recurring guest on this show. He's co-hosted. And he's here to talk about a show that I believe he is producing. Massasoit Community College, the Brockton campus, is bringing you Legally Blonde. Mark Rocheteau is our guest, and he is joined by Carly Williams. She is the lead in this role. She is Elle Woods. Mark, Carly, welcome to Monday Night Talk.
Thank you, Kevin.
Thank you.
You're welcome. It's interesting. You know, again, radio not being a visual element, is seeing. Now, is this your first radio interview? Have you done other interviews?
This is definitely my first radio interview.
Yeah. It's going to be super easy.
Yay, I'm so glad.
Super easy. And worst case scenario, we just make him do all the talking.
Oh, phew.
But you being the lead, it is going to be very important for you to kind of paint the picture for folks as to the importance of them coming and seeing you, Elle Woods, who a lot of folks see as someone who is naive and not worldly, and her coming into her own, well, at least the movie version that I know. Now, I don't know how much of this is a cross-reference and pretty much close to accurate. Mr. Rocheteau, who's our theater guru and has been doing theater for how many years?
Oh, my gosh, you want me to date myself?
No. But
at Massasoit or in general?
You pick what's better for you.
At Massasoit. Well, I've been at Massasoit. I'm just starting my 24th year at Massasoit.
Cut it out.
And I've been doing theater since I was, I'm not going to say my age at the time, but I've been doing theater for about 34 years now.
Favorite show ever that you've done, whether it's produced or that you have been, you know, like Godspell or something that you've been in.
Yeah. So, so there's a couple. I can't just give you one. So as far as
give me the Mount Rushmore if you needed to.
So I would say the Mount Rushmore was once on this island, and I did it twice at two different venues. One was at Company Theater in Norwell, and then I was fortunate enough a few years later, my senior year when I was on my working on my undergrad at Emerson, I did it at Speakeasy in Boston. And it actually was Speakeasy's first musical that they ever produced. And I was with an incredible team as far as a cast and crew, but I just love the musical. I mean, the musical is just, for those out there who know Once on This Island, it's just a beautifully written show. It's very simplistic in its presentation. It can be understood by all generations. And unfortunately, it's not one of those shows that's so well known that community theaters up and down the region are doing it, because it doesn't really draw. But as far as a show to do, it was probably one of my best. I have to say that Spelling Bee is the close runner up, only because it's a role made for me. So I would say those are my two top choices, is Once on This Island and Spelling Bee.
Okay. And to be fair, Carly, who is our lead in Legally Blonde, talked to us about doing theater. What are some of the roles that you have done that have led you to this one, the lead in Legally Blonde?
Like my favorite?
Yep.
Okay. I would say that my favorites have been... It's so hard. I love all of them, but
just do like a Mount Rushmore.
Okay, give you a Mount
Rushmore. You don't have to tell us who's who. Mm-hmm. You just tell some of the favorites.
Okay. Well, I was in Fun Home at Cape Rep Theater when I was maybe 13, and it was so much fun. It's such a good show. Like, there's just, oh, there's so much to like dig your teeth into. I played Small Allison, which was such a great opportunity for me. I think I really grew as an actress playing that, and it was just so much fun. And in more recent times, I would say that a really important role to me was playing Ariel in my school's production of Footloose. I went to Cardinal Spellman in Brockton. Ooh. And yep.
And, very interesting.
And playing that role was so much fun. It was such a great senior show, and it was a great time, because there's dancing and there's great songs. It's so good. So,
would you both say you favor musicals over a straight storytelling type of a production?
As far as I say, for me, it's just kind of even. But when you ask me my Mount Rushmore, the musical kind of stand out, but the musicals have an advantage in so much as the fact that they're musicals, right? Mm-hmm. The songs and dancing and whatnot associated, and that kind of makes it just intrinsically more fun. But I have performed in what I felt to be poignant straight shows as well. So,
Carly,
I agree. I think you really covered all of it. I love both, but musicals just, they hit different. I don't know.
Okay. If you will, Mark, kind of give us how is the stage production similar or dissimilar to what everybody has come to love, that, you know, Reese Witherspoon is the star of the movie?
Sure. So I think that for fans of the movie, you won't be disappointed. The storyline is pretty much the same, and what makes the musical what it is, the storyline, excuse me, from the movie. And I think for me, because I was a lover of the movie myself when it came out in 2001, and I feel like the musical only enhanced it in a sense, because it's like we're saying, you know, straight show to musical, it has, the added, now there's songs and there's dancing to it, and it makes it such a fun show to watch as an audience member beyond the storyline that we already know from the movie. So for those who like feel as though, oh, they've had enough of the movie and why go see the musical, there's a whole lot more that Legally Blonde the musical presents from beyond the original film. But I will say that there's no disappointment whatsoever because of the added features of the show.
Okay. Carly, talk to me about auditioning for this. When did you hear about it? And what was your mindset walking in to the table of folks who sat and watched you as you, you know, whether you read some lines or whatever you did during your audition process?
Yeah, so I knew about Massasoit Theater Company because when I was younger, like maybe 10, I played a workhouse boy in Oliver. So I knew about Massasoit. So when I saw that they were doing Legally Blonde, which is like my dream role of dream roles, I never thought that I would be able to play Elle. But I went in and I was so excited and I knew what I wanted. I knew that I wanted to be Elle Woods so bad. And I did my audition and I felt good and we did a dance call and I'm not a dancer first, at least. Like I'd say out of singing, acting and dancing, dancing is definitely my least strong suit. But I went in there and it was such a fun dance call. It was so high energy and great and everybody was just so positive. And yeah, that was lovely. And I went home. I felt good about it. I got a call back. I went back there. We did some reading. We did some singing. We did some dancing. And usually with callbacks, you know, it's a very high stress type of situation sometimes, but you know, the process was really easy. Everyone was just, again, so positive. I feel like that's really the takeaway from everybody in the cast and crew. Like everyone is just so positive and fun and it's the perfect environment for this type of show, I'd say.
What's the key to a successful show is building from the production staff.
Mm-hmm.
And for sure. And so I have to ask you, Mr. Rocheteau, I pick out a couple of names here that are veterans when it comes to theater here on the South Shore and beyond. Everybody knows Nathan Fogg, mm-hmm. right?
Yep. Can't do theater and not know Nathan.
King of the French Doors. And Samantha Briar Jones Sullivan, mm-hmm. who's amazing, her choreography and her direction. What made you decide to have them be co-directors?
So,
or did they decide for you?
Well, no, good question. Interestingly enough, I think part of the creativity of the team, the experiential tools that they bring to the table, there's an overflow between Samantha with her original strength in dancing, but she's also grown as a director. And Nathan, as a director, having done theater forever, and actually he was trained in dancing for, I want to say, a number of years, at least 10 years, yeah. He took dancing as well. So what happens between the two of them, there's a lot of cross-referencing and cross-checking with each other to the point where I don't remember what show it was now because they kind of bleed together, but there was a point where Samantha was cross-checking Nathan's direction and almost assisting him in a way. And I was like, you know, you guys really, and then vice versa. Cause like Samantha will choreograph something. And then at the end of the night, she's like, guys, come on over and, you know, let me know what is what. And Nathan is all about, you know, you need to tighten up here or add this or do that. So the two of them, their collaboration is so synchronous that they really are co-directors. Like if they're on the same project together, one is director and one is choreographer, they're co-directing. They just can't get away from it, you know. So that's I just call it what it is, you know.
So Carly, what was it like to get direction from this dynamic duo of Samantha and Nathan? And again, they've done so many fantastic shows that they have such experience and have been they have been nominated for awards, won awards. Mm-hmm. What was it like to currently be under their direction?
It is so awesome. They just have such a great dynamic. We'll be like working on a number like last night?
Night before.
Oh my goodness. we were working on a number and Nathan was directing, you know, me and a few other members for one part of the scene, and then Samantha was doing dance with some of the other girls in the back. Like, it was, you know, it was kind of like working in such a cool way that I don't think I've kind of experienced. And it was so, like, it all just came together. It's like they're working with the same brain. It's so cool to watch. It's really fun.
Well, I think it's important, and maybe you're going to say this, or maybe you've already said this, and I'm overlooking it, but it's important that if you're going to have multiple people who are going to be in on this, that the message is the same across the board, right? There's a synergy that is blessed across, and you're not getting it. There's not, if you're able to deliver the direction and the message in a succinct way that it's going to get it across, I think that's important. And having a team that does that.
Right.
What were you going to say?
No, I was just going to dovetail off of what Carly said in regards to the fact that I actually always say to them, you guys share the same brain.
It is.
And I relate, or I refer to that in regards to their work on the stage. Sometimes it happens off the stage, but for the most part, in regards to their collaboration, I think part of it is also because we've all worked together for so long now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we've known each other for, like, I've known Nathan, oh my gosh, for 20 something years.
Yeah, I've known him for a long time too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I've had to take direction from him as well.
I was going
to
say, you were one of our first shows together.
It was.
So time spent together is going to allow you those kind of insights to each other in your working ways.
So Carly, what has been fun about kind of getting to know this role, getting to know some of the other actors that you're working with? What has it been like? Again, we're nearly 3 weeks out from the show. Right? Am I right?
That's crazy. I didn't think about it in weeks.
Yeah, well,
that's wild.
So you look, I mean, again, this hits the curtain goes up on April 27th,
mm-hmm.
And it runs to May 5th. And just a quick tease here, if you're staying with us here, you can call the box office 508-527-1234. Okay. you can go online, massasoit.edu/box office. Talk to me what it's been like to kind of, you're slowly, I'm pretty sure most people are off book now, but it's just a matter of being able to have, you know, back and forth with your fellow actors and it feeling natural. Because that's what you want. At first, it's a little bit clunky because you're learning your lines. But then you want it to be natural. You want it to be believable for the folks who are watching it in the audience.
Yeah. I mean, something that I've been thinking about a lot with Elle's character is, because, you know, she's really bubbly. She's very optimistic. And trying to stay true to that really high energy character without making her cartoony and kind of, you know, keeping the reality of, you know, she's a woman who is in love with a man and, you know, she has aspirations and she has goals and she works really, really hard to achieve them and she's underestimated and she stays positive despite it all. And I think her character is so, just complex and inspiring, honestly. And I think there's a lot to work with there. So I'm kind of just navigating that.
Does the theater production rule out a bruiser? Or is there going to be a bruiser that is written in by the
Let me tell you, not only is there a bruiser, but there's a bruiser in training.
Get out of here.
There is. And there's the second dog too, right? We have both dogs that are coming to rehearsal and one actually submitted a headshot and resume.
Uh-uh.
Sure did. And
that's amazing.
And came to auditions and sat on the little X in front of the panel of judges and introduced themselves. So yes.
I love it. That's amazing. I didn't know.
No.
You don't know how similar or dissimilar.
Sure.
It's going to be from what we've all come to see.
Yeah.
You know, in the movie itself. Let's talk costuming and set design.
Sure.
Have you had a chance to get, you know, into costume or costumes? Because it's you being the star, you're going to have multiple wardrobe changes you're going to have to go through.
So we actually are going. This show is fast. This show is lightning fast in regards to one of the complications, the technical complications for the show when we talk about sets and costumes, yep, is the fact that the show, like White Christmas, would be a scene, and there's a song, and there's the end of the scene. And then you move on to the next scene, and a song, and the end scene, so on and so forth. And that's kind of how standard...
There's a rhythm to it, yeah.
That's how standard musicals are. Mm. When you get to the format that Legally Blonde is flirting with, which is kind of operatic, kind of Jesus Christ Superstar-ish in that sense, it just once it starts, it doesn't stop. There's like, there are music transitions, and people are transitioning to scenes in the music, and there's no stopping. Like, oh, here's the end of it, and it breaks. It's not like that. It just keeps moving. And what that does to our lead, Elle, who's almost in every scene, I think, right?
Yeah, basically.
Yeah, you're in every scene. So what that means is when she goes off stage, it's so fast. We're going to get two dressers for her to help her that is solely dedicated.
I think she's just hearing this for the first time.
Yeah.
This is new to her. But that can't be bad.
Oh, yeah, no, that's great.
Yeah, so
that's
you're going to have two because it's that fast.
Hmm. So who do you have as far as doing costume design? I know that your technical director is co-director,
and he's our scenic designer.
And he's
designing,
but he does a great job.
Yeah, no.
I'm curious as to whether the placement of the French toys will be. I say that to tease. I don't know if they will be, but he just has an affinity for
sure
French toys. So, I mean, what's going on? Who does the costuming?
So, I'm very excited about our costumer. She started with us, actually, I want to say it was pre-Chicago the first time. She came in as a volunteer, and she was very young. I want to say at the time she was a senior in high school.
Okay.
Her name is Bridget Austin Weiss, and she was a contestant once upon a time on Project Runway Junior. And she didn't win it all, but she did very well. And she continued in the medium of costumes and whatnot. And I had found out about her through having been on the show. There was an article in the Enterprise, actually, that featured her. And I got in touch with her and said, hey, you know, come on down and hang out with us. And so I want to say 8 years later, she's now the head of costuming for our shows. And she does an amazing job. Her dedication is off the charts. She works. She does costuming outside of Massasoit. So the side gigs, obviously, like Massasoit. I know that she's done a couple of colleges on the North Shore as costumer for their show. She's starting to get notarized, which is a good and bad thing for us. It's always a double-edged sword when you have a technical person who is starting to move up and on in the upper echelons.
Right, because they're not as easy to accessible. They're not.
Yeah, I mean.
Their schedule just gets bonkers.
Right, I mean, the great example I have of that is a former lighting designer, Mr. Matt Gaminski, started doing well, ended up getting the gig for Neon Trees, went national, and then started going international with his designs and touring and whatnot, and never to be back to the Massasoit stage again. So she's in that genre, and I expect great things from her beyond Massasoit, but right now we're really fortunate to have her, and all that she does is just spot on. And if you come down and see the show, you'll see some amazing costume work.
I'm going to ask you, I'm using an analogy here. What is it like to have Massasoit to be the soil that the seed is planted in to grow in Matt Gaminski?
I think, you know, it's funny because I think in one sense we're building a legacy that that we can refer to and we can refer our students to, you know, so that way we can say, you know, this is where you can go. When I started in Massasoit, it's interesting. I remember having a conversation with our then technical director, Mr. Artie Sharp, and he said, no matter what you do at Massasoit, as long as you do good work, when you leave Massasoit, you'll move upward and onwards. Mm. Everybody who works there always moves upward and onwards. I think Carly's a great example because when she was in Oliver, she did great work with us. And then
she's memorable.
But then she went on and did regional theater, like, and Equity. Didn't you do some Equity work too?
Well, I definitely did professional theaters. I never did the whole, I dipped my toes into the equity type stuff.
Right. Are you hoping that it's a career that'll take off eventually, or is it just something that you have a vision, you have a career path that is your normal doctor, lawyer, whatever it may be, but you know, you could be by night, you are somebody who loves doing theater, whether it's here on the South Shore or maybe performing up in Boston.
Yeah, so I love doing theater. I think it's so wonderful. I don't think that I could, live without having it a part of my life, but...
So we won't see you on Broadway anytime soon, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it's not going to be my career. I'm a marketing major at Stonehill College, so I want to do marketing in the future.
Oh, go Skyhawks.
Yup.
Way to go. And again, if you're just tuning in, we are very privileged to be speaking with Mark Rushto. He is the producer of Massasoit's soon to be on stage Legally Blonde. And Carly Williams, Carly Williams, who is the lead. She is the Elle Woods, and we're talking about the show. Again, just a reminder, if you want to get tickets, tickets are available online, massasoit.edu/box office, or you can call to purchase tickets, 508-427-1234. It's that simple. And the show dates, Friday, May 3rd. I think you only have one Friday, right?
Correct.
It's May 3rd. Mm-hmm. But Saturday, April 27th, May 4th, those are Saturday dates, 8 p.m. curtain mm-hmm. call. Sunday, April 28th, and May 5th, those are matinees. So the 27th and 28th, and then you have the 3rd, 4th, and 5th. Those are the show dates. And if you have any questions, when you speak to the box office person, they can give you all the details. And I believe they offer group options. If you're part of the Red Hat Society, if you are a senior or if you're a student, there is a discount. For those who are just general admission, $20 per ticket. We just got a couple of moments left here. Anything that you want to leave with our audience as to, again, marketing major here, tell them what kind of a fun show this is and what they're in store for. If they are one of the 430 plus or 450 plus individuals who are lucky enough to get a seat in the Buckley Performing Arts Center.
Oh my goodness. That's a lot of pressure. I would say, I've seen a lot of shows and I think Legally Blonde has left a real impact on me. I think it's such a fun show, but there's also a real message there that I think a lot of us, should see on stage. So I would recommend going. It'll be a great time. I'll be in a wig.
Yay.
That's kind of fun.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Mr. Rushto, this is you are the cleanup hitter here. Bases are loaded. If you will, for the home run, kind of give folks anything that I may have overlooked asking you or discussing during our conversation here on Monday Night Talk.
Sure. And again, to dovetail on Carly's point, I think one of the misnomers about Legally Blonde is that it's a foofy musical, but it does touch on some pretty serious issues that we have in our society in regards to, women's equality. It gets into the Me Too movement before the Me Too movement was even Me Too. Mm. It gets into work equity. And I think that those are some issues that the genius of Legally Blonde is that with the music and the dancing and the songs and whatnot, it kind of sugarcoats all of that. And it does hit the audience, but it hits them in kind of in a gentler way regarding with those harder topics.
It's subtle, more or less.
Yeah, but it's definitely apparent. So a great way to have a good family evening out and also to touch on some social issues.
Well, I want to thank you both for joining me for this final segment. What a fun segment to be able to talk theater. I'm a big fan of theater, and especially knowing that there are so many local productions, whether it's Massasoit, which always knocks it out of the park, whether it's with sets, whether it's with the performances and the actors. Go down to Massasoit Community College. It's the Buckley Performing Arts Center, and it's located on the Brockton campus, Route 27. Again, I'm going to throw it out there, April 27th and 28th. That's a Saturday and a Sunday. And then you have Friday, May 3rd. May 4th is a Saturday, and May 5th is a Sunday. Differing times for the Friday and Saturdays. Those are 8 p.m. Sunday. It's a matinee at 3 p.m. If you want to purchase tickets, 508-427-1234, and check the online ticket sales as well, massslate.edu/box office. That's all the time that we have been allotted. But again, go out, check out the show. And more conversation next week, God willing, at 6:15 p.m. Have yourself a great night.